deep now. Just dip your head now. It's festival five this year. You hear the people sing, boom, boom, ba ba boom, 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 festival, boom, boom.
Welcome to the Bike Show on Resonance FM with me, Jack Thurston. If the newspapers and magazines are anything to go by, we in Britain are in the middle of a bona fide bike boom. Bike sales are up, and cyclists like Bradley Wiggins and Mark Cavendish have become household names. But look beyond the headlines and ask yourself, do you actually see any more people riding bikes now than you did 5, 10 or 20 years ago? According to official statistics, Britain has some of the lowest rates of cycling in Europe. And far from booming, we're flatlining. Here with me to debate the bike boom, or lack of it, are two seasoned cycling journalists. Carlton Reid is the founder of On Your Bike magazine and Bike Biz, the magazine of the cycle trade. He is the author of numerous books about cycling and has recently launched a Kickstarter campaign for his second crowd-funded book entitled Bike Boom. His roots are in cycle touring, then mountain biking during the 80s and 90s, but he's just as happy on his Brompton and his cargo bike. He lives in Newcastle. John Stevenson is a journalist on the road.cc website. Back in the 1980s, he worked as a shop rat at the Two Wheels Good bike shop in Leeds. He went on to become a journalist and editor and has worked on publications too numerous to list. Like Carlton, he started as a cycle tourist, then got into mountain biking before the inevitable descent into Lycra and the life of a middle-aged roadie. He lives in Cambridge. Welcome both to the Bike Show. So what I want to do to begin with is to ask each of you to state your case. Carlton, you think we are in the middle of a bike boom, while John, you think Britain is still overwhelmingly defined as a nation of non-cyclists. So let's begin, Carlton, with you. The floor is yours.
When I started as a bicycle journalist, it was a very lonely profession. There was just a couple of bicycle journalists at that time. There really wasn't that much. And look at today. How many bloody bicycle journalists are there? There's loads of them coming out from all over the place. How many cyclists are there today compared to when I started to write about bicycles? How many people are on Theobald Road cycling every day between 7 and 9 in the morning? There's 64%. Of the vehicular traffic, if you want to put it in those kind of terms, are cyclists. That, in anybody's terms, is a boom. Why is Boris and TfL, I don't want to make this too London-centric because I don't actually live in London, but why is Boris and TfL and Gilligan, etc., why are they spending over a number of years £1 billion on bicycle infrastructure in London, no matter how flawed it might be in part? It's because of the sheer number of bloomin' cyclists. There is an enormous difference now. Even if you look at all of the, which I'm sure John will bring up, you know, the 2011 census, which says, you know, the modal share is this blah, blah, blah. Yes, you can get stats to tell you anything. Look out of your bloody window if you're in a car, and that's where a lot of the angst comes from, and just look at the amount of cyclists that are now out there. Now, there aren't enough Asian cyclists, there aren't enough black cyclists, there aren't enough women cyclists. Maybe an awful lot of the boom are mammals, for want of a better phrase. Nevertheless, compared to 30 years ago, we are having an amazing amount of people out there who are on bikes.
That counts as a boom for you, Carlton. Well, you put your case very well. John, why did you take issue with Carlton's statement that there is a cycling boom and we're in the middle of it?
Well, I think Carlton's definition of a boom is incredibly narrow, because what is happening in London isn't reflected in the rest of the country. And as a result, yeah, London's had a substantial increase in the amount of people riding bikes. It's, you know, the mode share, by which we mean the number of journeys taken by bike as a percentage of all the journeys, is up to somewhere around 4 or 5% across the whole of inner London. But across the country as a whole, it remains stubbornly stuck somewhere around 2.5%, and it's been there for 15 years. So the boom that Carlton sees is very localized geographically. It's also very localized demographically. Even in London, which is pointed at as, you know, the great area of the bike boom, between the 2001 and 2011 censuses, the percentage of female cyclists actually dropped. So this is the young male and brave getting on their bikes in London and the southeast of England, because in London in particular, the alternatives are now all worse. The capital has become so ridiculously congested. If you want to get anywhere in a reasonable time, then a bike is pretty much the only way to do it. But it's certainly not reflected in the rest of the country. You know, my hometown of Leeds, the motorway city of the 70s, remains the motorway city of the 2010s. The mode share there is down somewhere around 0.5%. It's so low you can barely measure it. And even the commuting mode share, and there's always a peak at commuting times for people using bikes, which is where Carlton's 64% on Theobald Road in London comes from. In Leeds, it's still only a couple of percent. I would love to see a genuine bike boom across the whole country that saw that mode share even up to 5% over 10 years. But it simply hasn't yet happened.
This is where we agree. I agree with every single point made there, in that there isn't a boom everywhere. Of course, that's absolutely astoundingly obvious.
There's a difference, Carlton, between saying there isn't a boom everywhere and there's only a boom in inner London and a couple of other towns and maybe the Velodrome in Manchester, where they're winning a lot of gold medals. There's a difference between saying there's not a boom everywhere and there's only a boom in a very small number of pockets of places where people are cycling.
But those pockets have the potential to join up. So this is a glass half full argument that I make. Yes, the boom isn't everywhere. That is patently obvious. However, those little pockets where we are seeing absolute guaranteed rises in cycling of all forms, and my book, which is called Bike Boom, really isn't about transport cycling on its own. You mentioned the Manchester Velodrome there. Well, that was 20 years ago, that didn't exist. There is now Manchester Velodrome, London Velodrome, there's Newport, there's Glasgow, there's Calshot, Derby is opening. So we've got this growing culture of all sorts of different forms of cycling, not just transport cycling in the UK. And from these can springboard, and from these pockets, the culture will grow. And that word culture, bicycle culture, is abhorred by some bicycle advocates who say it's nothing to do with culture, it's to do with infrastructure. However, for instance, in the Netherlands, where did the Dutch get their infrastructure? They got their infrastructure because of their very, very strong pre-existing bicycle culture. So if we can get the variety of pockets to join up, we can increase the love at the take-up of bicycling culture, that will then lead to more chance of getting infrastructure. It's chicken and egg. And I find it very strange that we are arguing, if that's the right word, a program which actually celebrates the many facets of bicycle culture. So Jack, your show is a great example of the various pockets that are out there of bicycle culture, which could potentially be joined up.
That's very nice of you to say that about the bike show, Carlton, but we're a very niche show on a niche broadcaster for the last 10 years. But I have been here long enough doing the show to look at what's been going on. And I kind of agree with both of you in different ways. And I do think there is a genuine argument here. And we'll get to why I think the argument is important in a little while. But John, I want to take your mind back to the 1980s and the mountain bike boom, I guess 80s into 90s. Mm-hmm. You were around for that. That was kind of part of your formative years in cycling. And we've seen mountain biking really disappear from the sort of premier position that it had within cycling in Britain. Because if we look at cycling statistics way back to, you know, the wartime, there was a brief upsurge during the mountain bike boom. How do you remember the mountain bike boom of the 80s? Can we describe it as a mountain bike boom? And how does that compare with the boom that we've talked about that there is now in terms of track cycling and urban commuting and the kind of middle-aged man in Lycra type of sportive riding?
Well, I think you've got two very comparable booms here, and I suspect actually a lot of them involve the same people, because when I was very active on the mountain bike scene in the late 80s and early 90s, as in fact was Carlton, that's how we met, that was young people getting out into the countryside, doing an activity which was lots of fun and that happened to involve bicycles. And what we have now, you know, your classic middle-aged man in Lycra, who's now in his 40s, well, they were the bicycle boom's late teenagers and 20-somethings. I suspect an awful lot of them really are the same people. So there's an awful lot of commonality between those booms in that they're a boom in a hobby which spills over into transportation. If you've got a mountain bike, you can blat around the streets of London on it. You can laugh at curbs and potholes, and you can use it to get around. And the same sort of people who are now riding road bikes are buying cyclocross bikes to commute around London because of their similar advantages, but they've got the riding position that they're accustomed to from a road bike. So, yeah, I think the two of them are extremely similar. And the sportive boom seems to me to parallel the mountain bike event boom. You know, there was a time in 1988 where there were a couple of hundred of us who would meet one weekend a month for a national series event, and none of us knew what anybody else looked like out of cycling kit. It was quite bizarre.
If we look back at that boom, it's relevant in thinking about, for American listeners, the road bike boom of the 1970s. There were great hopes that that would really changed the way people got around, that the bicycle was making a massive return and was here to stay. That didn't work out as a result of the mountain bike. There was a mountain bike bust, I suppose, after the boom. It didn't translate into an increase in overall levels of cycling. Why did the boom turn to bust in mountain bikes?
Well, part of the problem was foot and mouth, which closed the countryside for a year. The other part of the problem was simply that those riders who were in their late teens and early to mid-20s in the late 80s and the early 90s, grew up, got responsible jobs, got families, got mortgages to pay. You know, you can't risk going hurtling down a hillside and breaking your leg every weekend if you know you've got to be at work on Monday morning to pay the mortgage. Mountain biking still exists. There's still plenty of activity. It all moved to trail centres rather than into the open countryside. And I think an awful lot of the media activity in mountain biking was replaced by the internet. I think mountain bikers were very early adopters of forums and review sites. You know, Mountain Bike Review was around in about 1996, if memory serves. So that killed the magazines off from the, you know, 60,000 circulation level that Mountain Biking UK magazine had at one point in the 90s. So mountain biking hasn't gone away. It's just still there as part of the overall cycling mix as a recreational activity much more than a transport activity. I think there is one significant difference between those booms, which is that what we are seeing now is people not just using their road bikes and their cyclocross bikes to commute, but pressing successfully for better facilities. There was no political element to the mountain bike boom of the 80s and 90s because there was no real need for one. You were allowed to ride on bridleways. That was never going to change. Footpaths we weren't allowed to ride on, but if you were a bit sneaky, you could get away with it. I mean, Carlton knows all of this stuff as well as I do. Now, there is political activism, and quite successful political activism, pressing for cycling infrastructure. And I'd like to get back to a point that Carlton made earlier on about culture. I think the reason why the Netherlands got cycle infrastructure to the extent it was because of the pre-existing culture. But I think in the UK, cycling infrastructure may not be a sufficient condition for mass cycling, but I think it is a necessary one. I don't think we're going to see mass cycling in this country without infrastructure outside of London. And I think we're not going to even see proper mass cycling in London without infrastructure, because London is still the young, fit, male and brave as the main demographic.
Carlton, would you concur with that analysis from John?
It was a long analysis.
Anything you disagree with on
No, not at all. You know, by calling my book Bike Boom, it's almost inviting anybody to say, no, there is no bike boom, which is absolutely fine, because that's what I will be discussing. The fact that, you know, that there's been there's not just one boom, there's been many booms, including the mountain bike boom, which you discussed, and which John very eloquently said, you know, didn't have that political element, which he's absolutely correct on. And the Dutch element, how did they get their infrastructure? All very apposite to the current debate that we're seeing. And John is absolutely correct about the political impetus that is being put on by cyclists. And that is obviously something I discussed in my last book, which was I liken today's bicycle advocates to the 1890s bicycle advocates, who were also white, male, middle class, who knew also rescued infrastructure at that time and were very successful politically. So there's some clear parallels between the white male middle class bicycle advocates of today and the white male middle class advocates of back in the day. And I think to get out of that white male middle class bubble is almost where we've got to go, because there's a press release out today from the very fine academic Rachel Aldred about the lack of women, measurable lack of women in cycling, which is absolutely spot on. And something that we almost never address, the lack of racial diversity in cycling, which is unbelievably noticeable in advocacy circles. We have Ashok there at the head of the London Cycling Campaign, but how many other Asian faces do we see? How many other black faces do we see? Unfortunately, very, very few. So that could come from infrastructure. You know, you get more of a diverse population, but probably not.
We'll come to the recipe for success at the end, I think. But I just want to sprinkle a few statistics on the discussion. And first of all, looking at bike sales, which is a metric of whether or not there's a bike boom. Clearly, usage is probably more of a metric, but bike sales are an interesting indicator. And there was a Mintel report from last year. The gist of the report was that bike sales are up in terms of value, up 14% over 5 years. So more money is being spent on bikes between 2013 and 5 years ago, 2008. But unit sales were down. So we're spending more money on fewer bikes.
That report, I would say, is almost the other way around in reality. And for Mintel to pull those figures out is quite difficult, because there are no real figures. So this is, you know, a lot of it is being pulled out of thin air. And this has been, as the executive editor of the Trade magazine, this has been my absolute bugbear for many a year, that we don't have reliable statistics.
Okay, well, let's talk about somebody who does have reliable statistics, who is the finance director of Tandem, a man called Jim Shears. And Tandem is the big company that owns various bike brands, including Dawes and Claude Butler. And he said this in September 2014. He said, in recent years, you've seen the London Olympics effect and the Tour de France, and there are a lot more high-end cyclists about. People are interested in cycling, but it's not correct to say that cycling is booming in the UK. In our part of the market, which is mainly mums and dads going out for a ride with the family, we haven't seen the same effect. There's not a massive uplift in cycling across the country. Now, is that just sour grapes from a man who's running a company which is being bypassed by the likes of Rafa and all the sort of new entrants to the bike industry who are just a lot more with it, or is that an accurate assessment of where things are?
I did a Bike Biz story on that at the time, and I would say that's a relatively good summation of that particular person and his the company's place in the market. But he is right in that, and this is where I was getting to on the figures from Intel. The amount of bicycles are probably going up of sales. It's the average selling price isn't, despite the fact that I was in a bicycle shop in Birmingham yesterday, Biki Cielo, which is selling £9,000 Pinarellos. You know, they've got like 150 on the sales floor. You'd think, wow, isn't cycling doing fantastic? If you come to the, you know, the whole population level, where he is correct, the average selling price of a bicycle in the UK has risen hardly at all, and it's about £224, and it goes up to like £227 over a couple of years. But the number of bicycles probably has increased. And it's that average selling price of a bicycle which is key, because if you look in the Netherlands, the average selling price of a bicycle is nearer €1,000. So basically, Dutch people spend an awful lot more money on their bicycles than British people in whole population terms. And that kicks into all sorts of different parts of the bicycle culture. Why do they spend that much more money on their bicycles? And this is partly, it also ties in with, you know, infrastructure provision, working class communities wanting, you know, the car as their status symbol and not the bicycle. So we have a status problem still, even despite the mammals. We have a whole population level status problem of bicycling, even though I said before, you know, it's white male middle class. That's not the perception. The perception of bicycling in this country is still that it's you know, you buy a car, you know, it's something for paupers to do. And we know that's not actually the case at all. It's completely the opposite. But that is the perception, and it's shifting that perception. So no matter how much infrastructure you put in, will you get whole population term going on to using that infrastructure if the status of cycling isn't high? So the bicycle infrastructure in the Netherlands is used partly because it's the egalitarian nature of cycling, because it's not cycling, it's just getting around on a bicycle. It's not a lifestyle thing, it's a practical thing. So changing the status of cycling is a key thing for us to be plugged into. And so my book, which is talking about the bike boom, will also talk about how those pockets have got to be joined up, and including the pockets of changing the status.
Isn't there a problem with a cycling policy that is very sport heavy that we've got at the minute? The moment you ask a politician about cycling, they talk about gold medals at the Olympics, and make cycling look like this thing that you have to get dressed up for, you have to get fit for, you have to get hot and sweaty doing, that is not really the reality of mass cycling in places where there is mass cycling. Isn't there a real problem with sport being the poster child for cycling?
Yes, absolutely. There is very, very poor evidence that big events like the Olympics and the Tour de France actually lead to people riding bicycles or indeed becoming more active at all. And the Olympics in particular has colossally failed to deliver that. There's been no increase in the amount of physical activity that people in the UK are undertaking as a result of the Olympics. This is, well, it's a lie, I'll be blunt. It's a very nice excuse for spending £10 billion, but it doesn't actually work.
Well, let's move on to the question of, does it matter if cycling is said to be booming or not? And this is kind of the reason why I really wanted to bring you together, because I think this goes to the heart of it, because there's a real problem here, the way I see it. Because if we say cycling's booming, and in the absence of any significant pro-cycling government policies, then a politician can turn around and say, well, if cycling's booming, there's no need to do anything other than keeping the national lottery money going to the GB track cycling team. If cycling isn't booming, if John's right, then doesn't that show that British people basically don't want to cycle, and so they prefer to drive, walk, or take public transport, and politicians can just say, well, you know, cycling, that's something that the Dutch do, but it's not something that British people want to do. So there's a dilemma for those of us, and this is all three of us, where we agree who we want to see mass cycling return to Britain. We want to show there's a demand for a much more serious and significant cycling policy. And what better way to show that there is that demand by saying, look, there's all these people on bikes. But on the other hand, we don't want to say cycling is booming, because if we do, then politicians will just turn around and say, well, that's great, there's no need for us to do anything at all.
It is a dilemma, of course. But at the end of the day, success does breed success. And one of the strongest cases for cycling, apart from the fact that, you know, we won't go into the saving the planet stuff, but, you know, you've got the bikeonomics part, which I think you've got to talk the language of politicians. And politicians like talking money, and either saving money or spending money on big infrastructure projects. So the European Cyclists Federation, the British Cycling, you know, report from a couple of years ago, which were very much talking, you know, money. That is the language of politicians. and the statistics I mentioned before, the TfL statistics about numbers of cyclists, they are hard economic numbers.
They're also very small numbers.
Because they're on very certain roads, and you know, but these are the kind of things that get changed. If you talk about, look at the amount of cyclists that are on Theobald's Road, that's potentially triggered £1 billion of expenditure to be spent on increasing those numbers of cyclists, you know, across London. And it's the potential there for across the UK. Cycle Advocates and the UK Cycling Alliance, which is British Cycling, Sustrans, CTC, etc., you know, they are currently lobbying hard to get the manifestos of all the main political parties to mention cycling. So the Infrastructure Act is an absolutely key act for cycling, because for the first time, it makes sure that future governments have got to put money on the table and they've got to actually cater for cycling. So we are potentially, and this is where the bike boom comes in, we are potentially at a tipping point. If you want, you have got to dangerize cycling by saying it's incredibly dangerous to be on these kind of roads. Fine, that there's a part for that to be played in, like the die-ins and stuff. But we've also got to talk about the massive economic speed potential for bicycles, the way that bicycles in cities can transform cities. So get the cars out, put the bicycles in, and let's just keep ramming that message home. And I think politicians now in the UK are actually potentially moving that way. So we have got to keep on prodding them. And it's no good being defeatist. We have got to be very positive and say, this is growing, this is booming. You've got to now put infrastructure in. You've got to support it. If we say it's failing, if we're saying there's no cyclists, they're not going to provide anything. We have got to describe how it is actually booming.
So, John, we're at a tipping point. We need a few more cheerleaders to get us over the top. You're just raining on everyone's parade.
I see that as my role. I think Carlton's absolutely right in that what has happened in London in the last 10 years is a brilliant case of a good example where we can point and say, look, despite the fact that London is actually quite an unpleasant place to ride a bicycle, it's such an unpleasant place to get around by any other means that people are riding bikes anyway. Imagine what would happen if riding a bike in London becomes a pleasurable thing. Imagine how many more people will ride bikes, and imagine the beneficial effects to people's health, the load on the NHS, and the general conviviality of the city. And I think that's something that we do need to push very, very hard. My issue with talking up the bike boom too much is that we need to be realistic among ourselves about what is actually going on. Bicycle advocates and bicycle enthusiasts need to talk honestly among themselves, even if we talk this up to politicians, even if Carlton puts his marketing hat on, which he does extremely well, to go to Westminster with the rest of the Get Britain Cycling campaign people and say, look, this is happening, let's make it bigger, let's make it better. But I think there's a need for an honest conversation among ourselves about what is actually happening on the ground, so that we can look at the good examples and learn from them, and also look at the bad examples and learn from them. You know, I keep returning to Leeds because it's a city where I was born, it's a city I know well. I was up there a few weeks ago, and even driving around Leeds is a hideously unpleasant experience because it's been so massively car-centred. Leeds could be a lovely convivial city, which is a pleasant place to walk and ride and drive, if it had more facilities for vulnerable road users, if it had more facilities for pedestrians and cyclists. But it doesn't, and as a result, it's a shithole.
Do you know, one of the things that I think is the tipping point, and I point to this frequently, is that an awful lot of how Leeds became a car-centred city, and ditto for Birmingham and most other cities, of course, in the UK, were the planners and the politicians, but the planners who were educated in the car-centric 1970s, they put all that brutalism in. Because it was the planning education system. That's all they knew. That's all they planned for. They certainly didn't plan for bicycling. Bicycling was assumed to be would be extinct by 1980. Was the thing they knew, the Buchanan report in the mid 60s. But now we have a different bunch of planners. There are courses on livable cities. There are courses on the complete streets kind of campaigns of just having more facilities for people, things other than motor cars. So the tipping point comes from now the planners are being educated into getting rid of cars. We are no longer in the future going to be providing for cars in cities. I think that is almost what it is, uncontroversial. No city in the world is campaigning for more cars in the way they were doing in the 1970s. So if we keep on pushing that, and this is also a thing for pedestrians, this is not just a bicycle thing, then these things will come about. And the very fact we've got planners in their education streams now talking about this and now learning about this means in the next 20 years, we've got a very, very different urban realm coming. So we just need to keep on pushing the bicycle message in a way that's very positive. Yes, realistic about where we are maybe not booming, which is absolutely fine, but keep on getting the positive message out there about the benefits of bicycling. And I think if we get too pessimistic and say roads are dangerous, you know, so many people are dying, and it's just not true. People are dying. We know that. And it's awful. I don't want to say only, but it's only 120 people a year, which sounds awful. Of course it sounds awful. But in whole population terms, that's actually nothing. But if we focus on those 120 and we don't focus on the 50,000 people who are dying from sedentary diseases, then we are failing as bicycle campaigners, because we should be talking about the benefits of cycling and not just the dangers of cycling.
Carlton set out his recipe for how to get Britain back to mass cycling. John, what's your roadmap look like?
Pretty much exactly the same as Carlton's, to be honest, because what
I
Carlton
told
is
you we would agree.
About, oh, we were always going to agree, because these things are, you know, our disagreements are on nuance of messaging and perception of what's going on out there, but we want the same thing, which is lots of people riding bicycles.
Yes.
You know, it's good for society's health and it's fun. You know, I just got back from riding 3 miles to my girlfriend's daughter's primary school to drop her off. She's on her little frog bike, I'm on my road bike, and it's the nicest way to get around. And Cambridge, for all that it has a very high percentage of cyclists, it still has fairly piss poor cycling infrastructure. That's changing at long last. Mm. You know, it's a beautiful sunny morning here. I don't know what it's like in London and Newcastle, but there isn't a cloud in the sky. It's absolutely glorious, cold, crisp, sunny winter morning. What better way to get around than on a bicycle? Mm-hmm. We need to provide for that. We need to enable it. We need to encourage it as well. But if the livable cities and the public realm is not structured to assist it, then it's not going to happen. However much we encourage cycling and however much we try and train people, we need all of those elements.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you, Carlton. You can read John's journalism on cycling at road.cc, and you can find out more about Carlton's new book, Bike Boom, which is just succeeded in raising the Kickstarter funds that it needed to make it a reality. You can read about that on the Bike Boom website. What's the website?
Bikeboom.info.
Bikeboom.info, and also check out the Kickstarter page. I'm sure that even though he's over the threshold, you can still back the project. Thank you very much, John Stevenson and Carlton Reed. Thanks for listening to The Bike Show here on Resonance FM with me, Jack Thurston. Until next time, goodbye. Boom, 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 boom. Gonna shoot you right down, right off your feet. Take you home with me, put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. How, 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 how. I love to see you strut up and down my floor. When you're talking to me, that baby tone, I like it like that.